Joining us in the studio this morning is Al Brown. You will know Al, of course, from Depot or Fed Deli or his Best Ugly Bagels. You'll know him from various TV shows. Hunger for the Wild was the original, I think. His new cookbook is Eat Up New Zealand. It is a thing of beauty. And Al is launching it with a bit of a road trip. Loves a road trip. He's going to be going to Queenstown, Wanaka, Dunedin, Ash Vegas, Ōtautahi, Christchurch, the Kapiti Coast, Wellington, the Wairarapa, Hawke's Bay, hopefully getting a bit of fly fishing along the way. Al Brown, good morning.
How are you, Jack? Thanks for having me on.
I'm very well, thank you, and thanks for coming in. It's a real pleasure. So have we got hidden motivations here? This is a book tour that combines other things as well?
No, I'd love to think so, but I've got two or three events every day, so it'll be... Oh, look, I just love a drive anyway. You know, that's pretty relaxing to drive through the country and you're always seeing something new, but I don't think I'll be able to string my rod together and flick a nip for any rivers in the South Island.
Well, you've done a fair bit of that as it is lately, and sorry to start on this, but Jackson Hole, you've just come back from Wyoming, where you guys did pretty well. Just tell us about the competition you were participating in.
Well, it's called the Jackson Hole One Fly, and it's a competition that's been going for about 40 years. There's a whole bunch of teams from all around the world. A lot of American teams turn up to Jackson Hole, Wyoming for a two-day fly fishing contest, and I guess the unique thing about it is that you're only allowed, you have to pick one fly each day to fish, and if you lose your fly, you're out. So as most fly fishermen would agree, one fly for the day, you really have to protect that. And we did really, really well this year. We came third, and it was big thrill.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a pretty funny part of the world, eh, Jackson Hole?
Yeah, well, it's Cowtown, yeah. You know, and the Grand Tetons. It's beautiful. It's got a Queenstown feel about it, and we fish out of drift boats down the Snake River, which is a very famous river in those parts, and we fish for a little native trout called a cutthroat, and so it's all about the cutties. You know, they're not big fish at all, but they love taking the dry fly, so it's good fun.
Yeah, it's a I would have thought a slightly stressful experience when you've only got one for the day. Do you manage to hold on to yours, or did?
I managed to hold on to. I've actually fished the exact same fly 2 days, and it held up the whole time. So I was pretty thrilled. So it's quite a bit of pressure. You come off the water at the end of the day, absolutely rinsed out.
Yeah,
you know, the concentration, and you know, because you lose your fly, there's no points. And the reason we did pretty well this year is we all kept our flies through the 2 days, and it's a little bit like test cricket. If everyone sort of contributes, you can be there or thereabouts. So we picked up the third. It was great.
Yeah. Man, you get around. And I don't just mean that in the literal sense in terms of travelling, but you have so many fingers in different pies these days, don't you? Between the restaurants, writing your book, authoring your book, and also the travel that comes along with what you do. You are a man with a lot of things on the go at once. You're spinning a lot of plates.
Yeah, I guess that's right, but I've got a lot of really good people around me, a very supportive family and that sort of thing. And you know, we're a small little business, and you know, I'm kind of like a racehorse. It has to run every weekend, try and pick up a third or something to keep the business turning over. But I think the more that you sort of achieve and get done, more you think you can do. So my biggest problem is saying no. So I love the challenge, love plotting and scheming, and if someone comes along with a good idea, it's worth a crack.
Is that a love of food that drives that, or is that a love of the business world?
I think it's definitely the food and the people, and you know, I simply adore this country, and I think it's you know, where we live and what we have on offer, and being part of the hospitality industry from, you know, relatively early age, from my 20s right through to now, and to have seen what's happened in this country over that period of time and to be involved, you know, it's extraordinary. I think a lot of people arrive in this country, you know, Lord of the Rings, mountains, beaches and lakes, but when they're leaving, they're talking about, you know, food and wine quite a bit as well. And I think that's a lovely surprise for them. And it's I just think it's to be involved of it or be part of it. And our, you know, the thing about the food scene in New Zealand, our ace card is informality.
Yeah.
And we do that really, really well. You know, we're not really great at informal situations, but, you know, give us an informal situation and we thrive.
So what has driven that change over the time you've been working in the industry? Because I am obviously a relatively young man, so 20 years ago I wasn't eating out all the time at nice restaurants or anything. But it is clear to me that we have gone through a transition where our cuisine is a whole lot more sophisticated, but also the quality of our produce is a whole lot better. And the options for diners and chefs in New Zealand are just so much more diverse than they ever were.
It's extraordinary. And obviously travel's got a big part to play with that. And you know, that's this whole OE thing that we love to do as Kiwis. And I think those were the sort of light bulb moments that we had, that, you know, we suddenly realized if we could grow wine, maybe we could grow olives. And if we could grow olives, what about pine nuts? Tick, you know, wasabi, tick, saffron, tick, truffles, tick, you know. We suddenly realized that we were sitting on this, you know, this culinary gold mine or producer's gold mine. I mean, every green, every herb, because we have, you know, fertile soils, we have four pretty distinctive seasons, we have, you know, microclimates everywhere. It's extraordinary.
We have a lot of coastline that hasn't been spoiled.
Yeah, and I think there's a real, there's a comfort. When I started cooking, Jack, you know, I thought I wanted to be like, you know, the Michelin boys or the, you know, the French, you know, or the Italians, the people that had a lot of history in their cuisine. But I think there's been a real sea change in New Zealand that actually we're all about informality and we're about doing casual. Casual's king for I think, I just think that as Kiwis, we love being in that casual environment. We all love a barbecue. We all love being in a batch or a crib. And we don't, you know, we feel uncomfortable in formal situations. But informal, we thrive.
Yeah. We don't do fussy, eh?
No.
Yeah. But that's kind of the
mantra. We do generous. Yeah. You know, we do generous. You know, it's a plate of scallops, not three scallops.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
With a few dots, with
a jus or whatever.
Yeah, jus.
Yeah. See, is that the philosophy around your cooking still? That's how you try and... Because, I mean, in this book, you're... I mean, you have a real focus on quality ingredients, but nothing is particularly complicated.
No, I mean, and Eat Up is about, I don't really enjoy that word journey, but I'd like to call it an adventure, you know, New Zealand's culinary adventure. Writing Eat Up New Zealand, it's kind of Old Testament, New Testament. It's paying homage to where we've come from. And the two pillars, I believe, of our cuisine that we should be inherently proud of is our baking prowess. We're great bakers, fantastic bakers. And when I grew up, we were a real frugal bunch. So we didn't waste anything. We were great preservers. We love chutneys. We love jams. We love, you know, making, you know, tomato sauce. We love, you know, bottling peaches. And so there's plenty of that, because if you're going to write a book about where we've come from and where we are now, you have to pay homage to where it's all started. And you talk about my cooking. I've always been relatively simple and pared back, because again, I think the produce does this talking for you.
Well, that's it. When you have produce as good as we are privileged enough to have, you actually don't need to fuss around with it and fiddle with it too much.
And I think that's why so many people love the food here, is because our proximity to where it's actually grown or harvested or caught. It's like, you know, you buy, you know, some fresh corn on the side of the road in Gisborne in the summer and you eat it that night. Like the flavour of that corn, you know, the volume of flavour in that corn is mental. You don't even realise that corn could taste so sweet and so delicious. And then, you know, the next day it's still good, but it's starting to lose something. And I think so much of the food these days around the world, it starts in this coast, it ends up in that coast, it goes to this distribution centre, and then, you know, and so it's losing its volume of flavour all the time. But in New Zealand, you know, what are we, 50K from the sea anywhere in the country? So your seafood should always be, you know, fresh and super tasty, fresh and delicious. And likewise with all our farming and growing of vegetables, etc. You know, again, it's the volume of flavour in the food.
Tell us about that journey. I'm using the italicized fingers there. Tell us about the journey for the book, because I can imagine the publishers would have been on your back immediately after your last book and said, right, when are you publishing again?
Yeah, well, there's always a little bit of, you know, turmoil about that. The books are, you know, they take quite a while, and I like to actually write in the book, not just recipes. It has to be more than that to me. And this one, normally, you know, we just bury our heads for sort of 5 or 6 months and produce a book. But I said to Jenny Helen, and who's been my publisher through all the books, I said, look, I'm happy to have another crack, but I'd like 18 months to do it. And that's been a great process, in a sense that we sort of worked on the book for a week every month. And it's quite nice. You can come back to it. It's fresh again, and you're not sort of getting bogged down in a large project with a lot of pressure. So I think it shows. I think it's a lovely book.
It is beautiful. And I know that that's important, an important part of making a successful cookbook these days, right? Yeah. I mean, the photographs in itself, and I've pegged one out here. It's a photograph of a very inky-looking bit of squid. Yeah, it is squid.
It's not squid.
I mean,
yeah.
It is just gorgeous. And that's kind of a critical part.
Yeah, and the photographer for this this project was a guy called Josh Griggs, and, you know, 23 years old, first book, and he, to have that sort of passion around someone doing something like this, he's absolutely nailed the brief. And all these things we do, Jack, and everything that I do is about collaboration. And so, you know, great photographer Haydo, who works directly with me.
Yeah.
You know, amazing chef Gary does all the design on the book. So there's a whole lot of layers that make something really wonderful, and it's certainly not just about me.
So you run through all sorts of different things. You've got your mains, if you like, your seafoods, your poultry, your red meats, and that sort of thing. You also focus on baking.
Yeah,
and preserves. But there's another little element in this book that is really charming. And you mentioned the importance to you of paying homage and of collaborating. Near the end of the book, you have a segment where you go and speak with fairly well-known and successful New Zealand chefs about what inspires them and what they make of food in New Zealand, their best food memories. It's quite moving, actually. I wondered if you could tell us in particular about your experience with Tui Flour.
Oh, well, Tui passed, left us, must be 6 or 8 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to spend an afternoon, well, a few hours with her, actually. And she's always been to me this wonderful stalwart of New Zealand cuisine, and not just a wonderful chef and cook, but this beautiful person who really taught the country a lot about, you know, restaurant etiquette and all these, you know, she went and trained in France and just an absolute precious jewel of a woman. And I went to, you know, I had 2 or 3 hours with her. I took her some bagels around and
you were lucky she gave you 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah,
as well.
I know. But once, you know, you just sat there and I came out of those 2 or 3 hours, and this was in the original home that she grew up in. You know, it was not emotional, but it was a pretty moving experience. But the one that, you know, I just had a sore cheeks. The smiling for 3 hours,
yeah,
listening to her regale, you know, the tales and growing up and her childhood around food was amazing. So yeah, she's that was special that happened before Tui left us, and it's lovely to have that in the book for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there are all sorts of names that people will recognise as well: Peter Gordon, Sid Sarawat, Miles Kirby, Fleur Sullivan from Fleur's Place, Matt Lambert,
New York,
runs the Musket
Michelin chef,
star,
Matt.
In New York. And I guess this is one of the great privileges of your position. Not only do you go around and you know, talk to other chefs and cooks about what inspires them, but through the nature of your work, you are meeting a lot of really interesting people all the time, and they're often people who want to share stuff with you.
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's I've had a, you know, amazing career the last 20 years or so. I've got around lots of parts of the country, and I think meeting the suppliers and the producers, and getting, you know, it's kind of like if you meet the winemaker, you connect it to that wine. Every time you bring it out, you tell the story of when you met them, what it's like, and you take ownership of that. And you know, I think and it, you know, in our game, it's all about storytelling, and the more people that you meet, and all the, you know, the wonderful thing about New Zealand, I think, Jack, is that a lot of people come up to you and say, I've got this amazing little spot, this amazing little batch or crib, or by a river, by a lake, you know, by the sea, and would love you to come down and have a look at it.
Yeah.
And but, you know, please don't bring the cameras. It just, you know, we don't want anyone else to know about it. And you know, the crazy thing is, Jack, everyone's got one of those places in New Zealand, and isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, yeah, I can see, when you put it like that, I can see why you feel so strongly about New Zealand. Where does the empire end? What do you want to get? How many restaurants do you need?
No. Well, that's a good question. I don't need any more. I mean, I never say never, but I have a couple of great little restaurants that I work in, still working every week when I'm in town, and just as a waiter. But I love being part of the team and love working the floor.
I see you in there. I always think, man, shouldn't Al be at Jackson's Hole or you know, eating at a Michelin star restaurant, and there you are serving tables. Why do you still do that?
Oh, well, one, I really love it. I love the buzz of a restaurant. It's kind of like I'm having a dinner party and everyone's paying for it, you know, and so you're moving around and meeting the customer. But working with the team, it's I love the, I guess, the scale of the business now and don't feel that I need to open them left, right and centre. A big part of it for me is to create the culture around the restaurants and empower the staff and look after the staff. And I'm, you know, first thing I do when I walk into the restaurant is take the rubbish out. You know, it's like I'm part of the team, you know, and that's important to me. And I think, you know, we retain a lot of staff through that sort of idealism and it's not work. It's just, you know, it's adrenaline, buzz, you know, service, you know, all my team, you know, they're service junkies. They need their hit. They love it.
The half hooker sliders and the bone marrow.
Oh,
that's the winner for me.
You like the bone
marrow? Oh, yeah, the bone marrow. The bone marrow is something else. It's not like a first date meal necessarily.
No. But no, that would be slightly awkward being the first plate of food. Right.
Oh, it's just, it is delicious. And that's it. That's it.
Well, that's Fergus Henderson's dish. He has a restaurant called St. John in London that I visited a couple of times, and I ate that dish and I copied it absolutely as closely as I could. But on the menu at Depot, it's called Fergus's bone marrow dish.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, I got a text to say Fergus Henderson is sitting at the bar eating Fergus's bone marrow dish. So that was the ultimate compliment, and I went up and spent the afternoon with him.
Yeah. That is very special. Hey, thank you so much for your time this morning. You're going to be doing the book tour.
Yes.
Starts on October 1st in Queenstown. And I can see why you don't have time for much fishing, because you're going to be hitting the road and covering a lot of ground. October 2nd, Wanaka and Dunedin the 3rd. Ashburton and Ōwhatautahi Christchurch the 4th. You're in the North Island on the Kapiti Coast and in Wellington the 5th in Wairarapa and the 6th in Hawke's Bay. All of the details are up at lbrown.co.nz, and we'll make sure they're on newstalkzb.co.nz. Eat Up New Zealand is available now or available in the next couple of days? Next Friday. Okay, available in all good bookstores, as they say.
All good bookstores.
Hey, thank you so much and congratulations.
Thanks for having me on, Jack.
It's a real pleasure. That is Al Brown.